Welcome to Raw and Real Entrepreneurship, the show that dares to bring the no-nonsense insight to those who have the courage to start, grow, and scale a business. Here is your host, entrepreneur, investor, and best-selling author, Susan Sly.
Well, hey, what is up, Raw and Real entrepreneurs, wherever you are in the world? I hope you're having an amazing, amazing day. And I have a question for you. You know, do you wonder why in this current landscape there are still people out there starting businesses? Because you might be thinking this is the recession, mortgage rates are crazy, borrowing money is insane, and there are people doing startups. And my guest today is in venture capital, which it means he's essentially betting on who's going to make it and who's not. And check this out. Not only is he a venture capitalist, he's a serial entrepreneur, published author. He has been on Mad Money twice. I kind of do have a crush on Jim Cramer, and I'm hoping to meet him in New York this year coming up. Anyway, he is the managing member of Flagstaff Ventures, which is a venture capital firm focused on early stage consumer products and services. He's the co-founder and CEO of venture-backed Retainer Club and Mouthguard Club. He has founded or co-founded half a dozen companies. And during his 3.5 years as president and CEO of Enjoy Inc., he led the company to a $1 billion valuation. That is unicorn territory, my friends. And prior to becoming an entrepreneur, he was a patent attorney. God bless him. No, seriously, patent attorneys are the best. I love them. I'm grateful we have great patent attorneys. And on top of everything else, he has 14 patents to his own name, including 5 for medical devices. And forget everything I just told you. He's also an amazing father. His children are remarkable. I'm a huge fan of his wife. She is an incredible badass. And I have the privilege today to have a conversation with my friend, Craig Weiss. So Craig, welcome to Raw and Real Entrepreneurship.
Thank you so much, Susan. It's a pleasure to be here. Really appreciate it.
Well, I have to laugh because it is Raw and Real. And people are like, oh, you know, you do these interviews and do you ever get nervous? Well, I had to do 2 takes of the intro because I was thinking so much about our friendship and our last lunch together and both being parents, navigating, building businesses and having kids. And the challenge it is. So because it's Raw and Real Entrepreneurship, what would you say is the biggest challenge that you're facing right now in terms of building companies, doing VC work, and being a dad?
You know, it's hard. It's so hard. And I feel like that word is just doesn't do service to, you know, the challenge. Like when I talk to people who are about to have kids, who don't have kids and they're young, it's like what they don't tell you is it's not that it's twice as much work because, okay, you're thinking to yourself, I can do more work. It's twice as much work on half the sleep. You know, it's this brutal combination of you're going to work harder and have less reserves and less energy and less resources. What I've found now, you know, is I'm at a place, I'm turning 50 next year, and I'm at this place now where I realize the complexity of my life is, you know, it just keeps getting harder, right? It's more complicated. I've got 2 teenagers now for children. That's getting more complicated. My businesses are getting more complicated. You know, everything is getting harder. And so what I found is just like with business, you have to kind of keep leveling up. I feel that way in my personal life. Like I would say I'm putting in a meaningful amount of hours each week into like personal development, family development, marriage development, just trying to, because I think we fall into this trap as entrepreneurs where, you know, we're like, you know, we're these go-getters, right? So we read books and we listen to, you know, Susan's podcast, and we're trying to like constantly get smarter. And if I said to everyone who's listening right now, what's more important to you, your business or your family? 100% of us would say family. And it's like, okay, but what's your commitment and time and energy and resources for personal development, family development, not professional development? It's like, oh, like how many conferences did you go to for your family? You know? And so that's kind of, so that's one of the things that's been hard is realizing that that actually requires as much or more effort, resource allocation, investment as everything else in your life. And, you know, there's just obviously, and of course you have to take care of yourself, and it's not a cliche. You can't just talk about putting the oxygen mask on yourself. You actually have to do it. And there's only so many hours in the day, and you got all these constituents. And so it's hard.
It is hard. And I think that just owning it and saying it, it's liberating. So Craig, Saturday night, we're at a dinner and for Harvey McKay's 90th birthday. And I think I'll be sharing stories on the podcast of what happened over the course of the weekend for the next several podcasts. But the Saturday night, there's 330 people and all these incredible people. Lou Holtz is there and Jay Abraham is there and all these folks. And so our friends, Glenn and Mindy Stearns, and Chris and I are sitting at the table, and we just start having this conversation about raising teenagers and what happens. You have a business meeting and then you're called to the school, and then suddenly you have to drop everything, go to the school, explain to your colleagues, oh, I have to leave this meeting because I have this urgent situation. And then something happens, and then suddenly there's reprioritization. And one of the people at the table, we talked about letting go of perfection when it came to parenting, because at the end of the day, like, there's only so much we can do. And to your point, it's we're not always going to be perfect in everything, but there's having this opportunity to be a parent and grow a business, it's not easy. And it's really uncharted, because our parents, 70% of parents in the 70s, one parent stayed at home. And now we live in a society where over 70% of both parents, if there are two parents in the household, they're both working. So it's so different. So for you, go ahead. Yeah, I know you want to say something.
Well, I was only going to say two things. One is I thankfully gave up on perfection a long time ago. So I haven't been holding myself to that standard because I knew it was impossible. I think two things I was going to say. One is, I think one of the hardest things about trying to juggle it all is when you, and this is actually a new realization on my part, was when I realized you don't get to pick, you don't get to schedule that school meeting. You don't get to schedule that phone call from your kid who's hysterical or who's upset, or you don't get to schedule when your spouse is like, I've got an issue that I need your help with. Like, so you can't say, you know what? So it's not a great time right now. So let me just, why don't you talk to my EA and we'll schedule this crisis, you know, at a more convenient time later. Like, that's just not how it works. So the hard part is, you know, as business operators, you know, you're focused on all these business needs, and then you have a personal or family need, which intuitively, you know, has to take priority, but you're like, oh, but it's just such an inconvenient time. It's just so inconvenient. It's like, yeah, that's the deal, right? If it was convenient, then no one would be talking about this. We're like, oh, it's so easy to balance everything. It's not, because it never works out the way you want it to. It always comes at the worst possible moment. And that's, in many ways, though, I'm now embracing that, which is, that's the test. That's the test of whether you really, where your priorities really do lie. Because you don't know. If everything happens at the most convenient time, you don't really know. But when you're faced with that dilemma, I have to choose between this current business situation and my family, then you have to make a choice. And that's how you know who you are.
Well, it's how you know who you are. And also, I have a philosophy, and you know this one, that I won't do business with anyone that I'm not willing to have the dinner table with my kids. And so we're friends. And so obviously you pass the dinner table test. That how do you, Craig, go from, I'm so curious about this. So you get the call from the school. Okay, so that situation's calming down. Now you have to transition super fast and go into a huge meeting. So how do you shift your mindset super quick?
So it's interesting. It's funny you ask, because it's one of the things that I've now discovered is actually like a little bit of a superpower of mine that I didn't know that I had. Is, and I don't know that it's a good thing, but I am able to transition really quickly from not just personal to professional, but you know, I have 11 portfolio companies, you know, in my venture capital fund, and there's, you know, and I'm constantly talking to new people, and so I'm I'm almost on a pretty much on a daily basis, I would say multiple times a day, having to shift my entire brain from one conversation to another. I'm talking about retainers, and then I'm talking about, you know, French fries. And it's just like, you know, I'm just going from one thing to another. So I've had to do it. There's a guy, though, that I have a tremendous amount of respect for, who's kind of a CEO whisperer, this guy in town named Jim Mitchell, who's an amazing human being in Phoenix. And I had the privilege of him speaking to my CEO group. And he actually had some incredibly powerful tools for actually doing that, which is just taking even 30 seconds in your car in between those two things and just breathing, right? Just focusing on your breath for 30 seconds, 60 seconds of just, and just, if you can do that, it's a great way to transition. His recommendation is basically you do that every single day when you come into the garage. Like when you're coming back home, you need to kind of breathe out that, you know, he has this great frame of reference. Like we're CEOs, right? So we're just like these problem solvers. And he's like, the problem is if you don't transition properly, you're going to walk into the house with this problem solving sledgehammer. And then like your kids are like, hey mom, hey dad. And you're just like, whack, whack. What's your problem? I got a solution. Don't talk to that kid anymore. You should do that. Like, and then all of a sudden your kid's just like, you know what? I'm going to go talk to dad. Like, you know, I'm going to go talk to someone who's not trying to like problem solve everything. They just want someone to be able to listen. And we need to be able to transition from problem solving mode to listening mode.
From problem solving mode to listening mode. It's so, because this is raw and real entrepreneurship, that ability to transition from one conversation to the next. Even before this show, we were talking and I had a customer facing meeting. So my mind is, you know, computer vision, AI, and you know, what the use cases are. And then as soon as we're done this show, then we have you introduced us to an amazing vendor who's flying in and doing a presentation. And then it's just, you know, you go from one thing to the next. And then I love what you said about taking that 30 seconds and just taking a deep breath and that shifting into parent mode or partner mode or whatever mode it needs to be for someone. Because I've even seen in, you know, for myself, if I go into the house and I'm still in CEO mode, it means I'm not in wife mode to Chris. I am not in parent mode to the kids. And that is not a place of power for sure. So switching gears, but not so much, because I am sure with all the ventures that you're managing, that you're a parent in some of those situations. But I want to shift gears, because you made a decision with Flagstaff to go really early stage for investment. And for people who are not aware what that means, can you describe how early you're investing in these companies?
Yeah. So what I learned was things have changed in this institutional investing world over the last sort of 10 or 15 years. I think there was a point really not that long ago where venture meant free revenue. And private equity meant revenue. And over the last sort of 10 or 15 years, that's just not true anymore. Everyone's kind of moved upstream. And now venture investors want to see revenue. And private equity investors want to see even more revenue. Yeah. And so the only people, I don't want to say the only people, but almost the only people investing pre-revenue are angels, just individuals who are willing to write a check because they know you and they're willing to take a risk. And so my feeling is pre-revenue is where you know, it's the maximum amount of risk with the maximum amount of upside, because you have no idea whether it's going to succeed or fail. There's no traction. There's no customers. So you're really taking this leap of faith. Of course, though, because there's no revenue and there's no traction and there's no customers, the valuation is going to be certainly lower than it would be if there's less risk, because the business model has been proven out. So it's not that I like only want to do pre-revenue. I think of my 11 investments, literally half, I think five were pre-revenue and five, and I think six were post-revenue. So about almost 50%. And so it's really comes down to me of it's a leap of faith. So it's based on that you know, I have a similar feeling that you do, Susan, about doing business, you know, only the people I would want to have dinner with, and, you know, with my kids there. I definitely have a view that I'm only going to invest in people that I genuinely like, that I really want to see be successful, that I really care about. And almost their success is important to me emotionally. And you know, the financial success, that'll just be a byproduct of seeing a good person be successful. And I think that ultimately pre-revenue is exciting to me because it's like, it's that building the airplane while, you know, putting on the engines while you're in flight. And mm-hmm. So I love that. I love having to make complicated decisions without sufficient information, where you only have part answers and you got to make bold decisions and move quickly. So, and I think those are the people who need the most amount of help. Look, I wouldn't be where I am today without a powerful mentor who was incredibly helpful to me. I didn't know anything. And so I try to channel all of that, like sort of pay it forward with all what I received, and try to be as kind hearted as I can, but to help my fellow operators, because I was one of them. And I, like you, live in the real world where things are super messy and don't run smoothly like someone might think they do on an Excel spreadsheet if they've never been in the real world.
Or on Instagram.
Exactly.
Isn't life exactly. Instagram perfect?
Exactly.
The testament to your character. So Craig and I were having lunch and he's showing me these ventures and these founders. And he's not just like, oh, this is this company. Craig talks about the person first and their life and what's going on for them and where they came from and where they went to school and everything else. And it was, Craig, it was so beautiful to see. And since you're doing this and we're in these economic headwinds, so to speak. Jim Cramer, though, has different words, not economic headwinds. He says something different. I was listening to Jim on the on CNBC this morning. So we're in a very interesting economic time. We're seeing large companies, Meta just laid off 11,000 people. We see Twitter, he's doing a restructure. It's, you know, whatever that's different, but we're seeing mass layoffs in tech. And here you are investing at what some would consider a very risky time. And so because you're betting on the person, not necessarily just the idea, in your mind, what makes a successful founder?
So a successful founder to me is, it's a great question. And it's not obviously that one size fits all, but the qualities that I've seen over and over again in successful founders is it's actually really an interesting combination of qualities, because some of them are almost in conflict with others. You have to have a failure is not an option, never quit mentality. Mm-hmm. At the same time, though, you also have to have this flexibility. You can't be so rigid that you're saying failure is not an option, so I'm going to just keep doing this thing over and over again that's clearly not working, right? So you have to be able to differentiate between overall failure as opposed to the failure of this specific thing that you're working on, because overall failure is what you want to prevent. But it might be that this business initiative is not a good idea. It's not working and you need to pivot, right? And so pivoting isn't quitting. It's keeping your eyes on the big picture, which is, okay, I tried it. Didn't work. That's okay. That now let's try something else. And so you need to have, definitely flexibility. You can't be rigid of thought. You have to be flexible, but you don't want to be so flexible that you're like, oh, I'm not sure if this is working. Let's just quit and we'll try something new. Oh, that's not working. I'm not sure if that's working. Let's just try something new. Like you've got to actually, really put forth the effort to be successful. And only if it's clear from the evidence, whatever you're trying isn't working, then have an intelligent conversation about what a pivot might look like. But that never quit attitude combined with flexibility is really important. And then probably as important as those two is passion. Like if I meet somebody and it's like, so why are you doing this? And if they say, I just really want to make a lot of money, I'll never invest in someone who says that, and it's not because they can't be successful. It's funny. This is a story I've never told anybody else, Susan. I was on a panel, and I'm not going to say the name of the person, but I was on a panel pre-COVID with this gentleman, and I didn't know him. So we're getting to know each other backstage before we go on the main stage together. And I go, and he's doing this company that is like a logistics type of company. And I've always been curious about people who do businesses that I couldn't get excited about personally, because it sounds kind of boring to me. And so I said, so like, you know, Ryan, like what, you know, what are you passionate about? Like what floats your boat? And he's like, I just really want to make a lot of money. And I just remember being like super turned off by that. Now, fast forward to today, at the day that he said that to me, I don't know how much money he was worth. I don't think his company was that successful. The company is extraordinarily successful. And I believe on paper, he's now a billionaire. Okay. Mm-hmm. In the 5 years since we had that conversation. So it's not that I'm saying to you, people who don't have the passion can't be successful. I've probably met 24 billionaires, and they're the same cross section of that you see in the rest of what I call Gen Pop. You know, some are jerks, some are sweethearts, some are brilliant, some I just don't think are that smart, and they were just in the right place at the right time. You know, like it's the same thing you see from everything else in society. So I think for me personally, I need to see passion, that they just love what they're doing. They're passionate about it. And financial success is just, you know, that's just an outcome that happens as a result of being passionate about what they do.
Yeah, I think, and I know exactly what you're saying. I've met the people who might say one thing on stage, but backstage are like, I just want to make the money. Money, in my opinion, is a byproduct of all the things you said, the ability to focus, the ability to pivot, to be flexible, to be passionate. And the thinking about that and thinking about who you've chosen in this group of people who are so impressive. But let's be real. The early stage investing is a long hold. This is not like you're going to early stage invest and be out of these companies. How long do you expect the average company to take to exit or IPO in your portfolio?
Right. So I would say, you know, you're right. It's a longer hold time. Venture just is kind of cool for probably your listeners, because I didn't learn this until I got into this space more closely. So venture as an asset class, like if you were going to say private equity, you know, buying publicly traded stocks, investing in real estate, venture as an asset class actually outperforms every other asset class, just in terms of financial performance over time. It does better, but it's also the most illiquid. And that's the trade-off. So you're going to get the best financial performance for venture with the most amount of illiquidity. So a typical venture capital fund like mine is structured as 7 years. So if you give me your money, you should not expect to get it back for 7 years. Now, as a practical matter, you should start, you know, venture does start paying out sooner than that, because as soon as any one of these 11 companies, you know, gets acquired or, you know, goes public or has a liquidity event, that money is distributed out to the LPs. And so that's some of, I've already actually in the first 12 months made a partial distribution. So as companies have liquidity events over time, there'll be distributions. I would just, whenever I talk to people who are contemplating an investment, I say that while my hope and expectation is to be able to send money out every year, you should not be giving me any money that you need back, you know, in the next, you know, 7 years, right? Just in case. So, and some are going to have liquidity really quick, and some are going to just take a long time, just because things didn't work out the way they wanted. They had to pivot, they had to try again, you know, and of course some won't work out at all, but so far I'm still very bullish on all 11.
Well, and it's a testament to you, right? Because I know you're very good at seeing people's hearts, and that's one of many things that I adore about you, honestly. And it's tough, because even for the companies I'm invested in, I mean, I'm always thinking about if I was in that person's shoes. And I've also shifted because of the economy, what I'm entertaining investing in. So I just had Estelle Giroux on, and she's an early stage founder. She's doing a capital raise in the med tech space, has a PhD, and she is so passionate. And we were talking about playing the founder game, which means you put away all other distractions and you're laser focused because you're accountable, not just to your staff, you're accountable to investors, you're accountable to VCs, like everyone that you have to do that. And she is a toddler, Craig. So that's a whole different level of sleeplessness, right? And when she said that about playing the founder game and that ability to focus, and we think about this economy. So let me ask you this question. Somebody who's listening right now and saying, I'm thinking of starting a business. This economy is horrible. What would you say to that person?
So look, I mean, my views on entrepreneurs, so I'm a proud entrepreneur myself. And like when I guest lecture at W.P. Carey at the business school here at ASU, I say to the, whether it's seniors taking entrepreneurship or the exec MBAs or the regular MBAs, I say, look, I love being an entrepreneur. It's not for everybody. And there's no judgment. You know, some people, they just want to get that paycheck, you know, every 2 weeks and not have to worry. And I get that. I have respect for that. I couldn't do that. I couldn't go to that world where I felt like my fate was in someone else's hands. And you mentioned all those layoffs, right? There used to be in my parents' generation, my parents have both passed away. I had much older parents and was born much later in their lives. So they grew up during the Great Depression, and the belief system there was, you know, you want to go work for a big established company, IBM, Ford, you know, because that was safe. But you just listed some of the top employers in the world and they're firing people left and right, like at huge volumes, not because of the performance of the individual, right? Just, you know, these macroeconomic conditions. So I don't think working for the big company as an employee is as safe as people think it is. So once I kind of got comfortable with the fact that that's not so safe, so if you're going to take risks either way, I'd rather my fate be as much in my hands as possible. Now, that said, of course, it's never just in your hands because you live in the real world. And so there's market conditions, there's suppliers, there's the supply chain nightmares, there's all of these issues that we all have to struggle with. And my psychologist always reminds me, you know, if it was easy, everybody would be successful, right? So I sometimes honestly am grateful. And one of my favorite expressions that I say at work is, the good news is it's complicated, right? Because that complexity is potentially your ally, because that's what's preventing other people from tackling this problem, because they're just too scared of it. It's too complicated, but you either have the subject matter expertise or the passion or both to tackle it. And it's good that it's complicated, because that's what's going to make you successful where others, you know, have fallen short.
It's good that it's complicated. And I love that you said that, because there are different philosophies out there like, oh, if someone else hasn't solved it, then why are you doing it, right? That's like the Roger Bannister thing. Okay, so no one ran the 4-minute mile, so you're going to give up trying until someone does it. And I think there's a lot of technological opportunities. I think there's a lot of CPG opportunities. I think there are a lot of things that haven't been done yet, not because they haven't been tested, but the right people haven't gone down those roads. So, all right, I need you to put on like a special hat, and it's the predictive hat, right? So my mentor always says, predict, predict, predict. So I'm going to do some rapid fire. You ready?
I'm ready.
Craig has no idea what I'm going to ask in terms of predictions. Okay. So let's start with technology. In your opinion, what are some of the next areas where we're going to start to see some great companies emerging in terms of tackling, you know, those problems that haven't been solved yet?
So I love that question. There's three areas where I see just enormous opportunity. So one is in this world that we're about to enter, and it's fun to talk about, because we're literally not in this world today, and we're about to be in a world that will be so radically different from the world that we live in right now. And in my mind, there's a 100% chance of this. This isn't something that may happen. It's for sure going to happen. But we live in a world as human beings today where almost our entire experience with reality is unfiltered. And we are about to move into a world where all of our reality is going to be filtered in augmented reality. And Apple's been working on this for years and years and years. And there is a 100% chance that there will be at first glasses and eventually contact lenses. And you're going to walk into a cocktail party and, you know, above Susan's head, it's going to say, Susan married to Chris, and these are her children, and this is their, and they play soccer, and they do, you know, this guy goes cross country and he's at GCU, and you're going to have all this biographical information. And I'm going to be like, hey, Susan, so, you know, how's Chris doing with, is he, you know, like, and so, but it goes so much more beyond that, because what's going to happen is it's going to empower so many people on this planet to do things that we can't even dream of. And I'll just use a silly example, because none of this exists. And I know for sure it's all coming. You're going to have a situation where, like, I don't know, your kitchen sink is clogged, and you're going to put on the glasses, open the cabinets under the sink, and there's going to be like blue arrows and green arrows, and turn this that way and turn that. And you're going to become a plumber just by putting on the glasses, and you're going to be able to fix your own problems. And like, people are going to be able to be mechanics and plumbers and maybe even doctors, right? Just by putting on these like Superman glasses that are going to filter their reality and superimpose, you know, make a left, make a right, do this, point there, you know, cut here. And I don't think people have any clue what level of transformation that's going to bring about. And the platform's going to be whatever, whether it's Facebook's Oculus or whether it's Apple or, you know, whoever, but it's coming. And the applications for that are basically limitless. And so that's one that I see. Another one that I see is, we've all heard about this thing called the blockchain, and we've all heard about crypto. And I've heard a couple of really, really interesting people talk about technology, transformational technology. And they had a couple of great examples. The two that I like the most are the personal computing revolution, the personal computer, and the internet. And so the story goes like this. The dawn of the personal computer revolution was, I think, you know, I think it was 1976, the front cover of Popular Mechanics magazine, you know, the first true personal computer. Before that, you had to go to a university to get access to a mainframe. And the promise was big, right? We're going to democratize this, you know, computing power. It's going to be for everybody, not just for the elite in these academic institutions. And it's going to change the world. And for the next 10 years, all you could use a personal computer for was to like play Pong. Like, And so people were like, hey, what happened to all that hype? Like, I thought this thing was supposed to change the world. Like, it's not doing anything. Now, it did change the world. We all know that what the personal computer has done, but it didn't happen overnight. It didn't even happen in the first 10 years. All of the promise of what they promised has been fulfilled and then some. But initially it wasn't, and it was a giant disappointment. And then it was the same thing with the internet, right? We're going to connect the world. We're going to share all this information. You're going to be able to do anything you want. Well, for the first 10 years, the internet was for sports scores, bulletin boards, and then basically porn was like the whole purpose of the internet for a good period of time. And I think someone even said to me the other day, 30% of all internet traffic today is porn. Like, it's still a big part of it. But what's crazy to me is, for so many years, this thing that they were promising was going to change the world, where everyone's looking around like, this, the internet, like, what's this TCP/IP? Like, what are all those initials even stand for? So it's the same thing now with blockchain. You've heard all this stuff about it and crypto. But if you really look around, I think for 99.99% of us, it's not doing anything to change the quality of our lives today. But it will. We're in that incubation period right now, that 5 or 10 years where people are like building the infrastructure. But there's so much coming from this world of distributed, you know, a distributed network where there's no central network. And there's a million things, but I'll just give you a silly one that I know is coming that doesn't exist today. You know, how does commerce work? Well, we have these people called employees, and they get these things called paychecks every 2 weeks. Well, that's not super efficient, but the problem is it's hard to pay people more frequently than that because the transaction costs are really high. You've got these payroll costs and all of this stuff, but the blockchain takes those costs down to almost zero. So in the future, your employees are going to have their wages streamed to them the way we stream music. They're going to come to work at 9 a.m. and they're going to buy lunch with the money they earn from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m., which is going to be in their account when they walk out the door. they're going to earn as they go. And so you can't do that today. There's no way to, you can't make the math work, but the blockchain is going to permit that. It doesn't exist today, but that's just one silly example of the many changes that are coming.
Well, and you, so AR, blockchain, crypto, I think, and to your point, that I was speaking at the AI at the Edge Summit in Santa Clara, and the head of the AR lab for Meta was there, and he was speaking. He's a fascinating, humble human, and talking about technological challenges and connectivity and things like that. So to your point, the people who don't know, they're thinking, why hasn't this been solved yet? Or ha ha, it hasn't been solved, therefore it's not happening. Oh no, it's going to happen. There are engineering challenges. There are even how crypto moved from proof of, you know, moving from proof of work to proof of stake. All of those things are taking time. The internet was clunky. I remember I had one of the first online coaching businesses in 1995. And I think some of us are old enough to remember dial-up, right? So how long did it take to get to where you were going? And in those days, could we have imagined that if we can't Google and get something instantly, that we're thinking that the load time is too slow for those websites? So it is all happening, to your point, Craig. And I think there are lots of problems that we're seeing in the world too, especially we started talking about parenting. I think therapy is going to be, one of my friends, Dr. Brenda Wiederhold, is working on depression, PTSD, learning differences, and using AR and VR to help with different therapies. I think we're going to see a lot of tech enablement for some of the mental and physical health challenges we're seeing. So all sorts of things. So Craig,
I agree with you, mental health. And I agree also about AI and obviously self-driving cars. I mean, all of those things are coming. They are. And what's cool about all of those things is, and the mental health obviously is near and dear to my heart personally. We've, you know, had many people in my family have had, you know, including myself, I would include, you know, have struggled with mental health on lots of different levels. And I think it's, and I don't think as a society, we've done a great job of giving the resources that we need to be able to tackle it. And we've done a lot on destigmatizing mental health, and people, I think, are getting to a place where mental health is health and they are accepting that, which is great. So I agree with you on all those things. I would just add that, you know, just remember with the internet, I'm glad you brought up, you know, dial-up in 1995. If you had gone to the smartest engineers in the world in 1995, and said, hey, can we use this internet thing to like stream video? They would say, it's impossible. It cannot be done. There's like, and they would have the 10 hyper-technical reasons why. Like, do you realize in order to be able to stream video, how much infrastructure has to be put in? Like, and they would just say, it's like, you can't even imagine the amount of investment and complexity. But yet today, we just take it for granted. Right? It happened. It was super complicated and super hard and involved all sorts of telecom companies investing, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars, but it happened. And to your point, that same transformation is going to happen everywhere else.
Well, Craig, I love it. And I think that the biggest thing that I would say to anyone listening is what I'm hearing from Craig. And we didn't even there were so many things. When Craig and I get together for lunch, it's like 2 hours, right? So there are so many things we didn't talk about, but I think the big message I'm taking away from you is it's always a good time to start a business. And if you have passion and you are flexible and you have that tenacity, that it's not going to matter what that landscape is. And there are always going to be distractions and there is always going to be chaos. But as long as you can be nimble enough to focus on what you need to focus on, when you need to focus on, you're going to be just fine. Well, Craig, I appreciate you so much. And we need to, like, offline, we need to figure out when we're all going for dinner. But
for sure.
I would just say I'm excited to follow Flagstaff Ventures. So it's flagstaffventures.com. Craig is going to open a new, this one is fully subscribed, and he started the fund with his own money, and he's going to open a new fund in the new year. So keep following that if you are an investor, and go to LinkedIn and follow Craig and his adventures on LinkedIn. I'm such a huge advocate on LinkedIn. And Craig, I'm going to do an unsolicited social media plug. And I'm going to say, this is a whole topic of conversation. I've been saying for a long time on the show that Meta was having too many problems. Instagram was going to go south. Meta's lost $800 billion this year. I said, Twitter is going to be the place to be. And now we're seeing it with Elon. So Craig and I, you can find us on LinkedIn. And we love LinkedIn. LinkedIn is a very happy place. It is a very, like, it's a lot more serene on LinkedIn than other places. But Craig, thanks so, so much for being here. I can't thank you enough. I appreciate you. And for everyone, if this show has been helpful or if, you know, a question for Craig, just go ahead, drop us. I would love a great review. You can go to susansly.com. I actually see all your contact forms. And Craig, I'm going to continue to follow your adventures. Thanks again for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, with that, everyone, this has been another episode of Raw and Real Entrepreneurship, and I will see you in a future episode.
This episode is over. However, there are hundreds of great shows on the Raw and Real Entrepreneurship channel. Don't forget to subscribe so you never miss a new episode. On behalf of our team, we want to thank you so much for listening to the show. If this episode has helped you in any way, please go ahead and give a great review on Spotify, iTunes, Amazon, or wherever you listen to this podcast. Please tag Susan on social at Susan_Sly at Twitter, Susan Sly on Instagram, and at Susan Sly Live on Facebook. With that, we will see you in a future episode of Raw and Real Entrepreneurship.